powered by the Tennessee Lottery with Brent Daugherty and Don Davenport.
Three HL on the road. We are in Gallatin, and man, we're having a good time. Lots of people coming by to say hello at Sudden Service on Nashville Pike, the corner of Douglas Bend and Nashville Pike. We'll be here until 6 o'clock, and they've got some cool things going on where you can help out St. Jude. Sudden Service and Pepsi are raising money for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital this fall. Stop in and pick up your favorite Pepsi or Mountain Dew 20-ounce product, 2 for $3. I've got one of each sitting right in front of me. Pepsi will then donate a portion of the sale to St. Jude. Last year, Pepsi donated more than $20,000 just from Pepsi and Mountain Dew sales. With your help, they hope to double it. Since 2008, Sudden Service has donated over $1 million to St. Jude's thanks to the giving hands and hearts of their customers. Now through October 31st, you can help by stopping in the store to purchase a St. Jude's pinup or pick up some of your favorite products from Pepsi and Mountain Dew, and Sudden Service will donate to St. Jude's. And when you check out, they'll ask you, do you want to donate $1, $1? And you say yes, and then you do it.
This is perfect for Kirby, because Kirby is Mr. Pepsi, right?
Yeah, and I thought
about... So think about that. Kirby, you're helping out St. Jude's.
I thought about...
All year long.
I haven't had sodas in a while, but I thought about going Mountain Dew here, but I opened my Pepsi to get into the Pepsi first, so Kirby wouldn't take it.
That's a good idea.
That's where I am. So we're having a good time, man. We're talking sports, saying hello to lots of zone listeners out this way, and it's a fun day. I told Jody Ballard that I was very thankful that she got me out of my office with no windows, and you know, there's like natural light and people,
sunshine,
you know,
and smiles.
Like if I walk out of my office and I see a person, like things are about to go down.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want that to happen, right. But here it's good. So
it's nice to be out. So come say hi. Stop by on your way home from work or just to get out of your house. If you are working from home, we feel you. We feel your pain. Come say hi.
There is a story coming out of Baton Rouge out of Sports Illustrated, Ross Dellinger and Pat Forty. We'll talk with Chris Lowe about this at 4:15. But LSU football has self-imposed some penalties. They've banned Odell Beckham Jr. from their facility for 2 years. He was handing out $100 bills after they won the game against Clemson. $2,000 worth.
Dude,
what a
awareness. Have a little awareness.
You're
what
on
are you
Nashville
doing?
Television.
You're screwing your alma mater. Like, what in the...
Yeah.
I can't even. I can't. I mean...
They have reduced the number of scholarships by 8. That's one of the things that they have done. Yeah, that was a wild scene. $2,000. And $100.
I know that doesn't sound like a lot. It's significant, though.
Well,
it's significant.
It's against the rules, too. Whether that rule is agreeable or not agreeable to you.
No, I'm saying 8 scholarships.
Oh, 8 scholarships. Yes. I thought you were saying $2,000.
No, I think that's significant as well.
Yeah. So if Odell Beckham Jr. wants to come to Sudden Service in Gallatin, we'll gladly take the $200.
It's not even an NCAA violation. Come on.
Here's another Odell Beckham Jr. story real quick while we're there. Mary Kay Cabot has covered the Browns for a long time.
Oh, this is bizarre.
Browns wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't think COVID-19 is, quote, going to enter this body. It's a mutual respect, end quote. What do we say about anybody that says anything about COVID?
You immediately get it.
You're next.
I'm telling you, like, COVID will come at you.
Unless you're Nick Saban. And then you're Nick Saban.
But Nick Saban never really said anything about COVID.
No, but he said when he tested positive, he said, COVID, how dare you? I'm Nick Saban. This is not happening. So he took another test, negative. COVID was afraid.
And another one, negative.
COVID
and
was
one
afraid
more, negative.
Of Nick Saban. COVID's like, not this
man.
Dude.
COVID's like, I'll mess with anybody.
Not.
I'll mess with the president of the United States. I will not mess with Nick Saban.
Not this dude. 615-737-1045 at 3HL1045. People sending me messages about Odell Beckham Jr. Good riddance.
What more stories or?
good riddance. What an a-hole. What a complete idiot for doing that on camera.
You know, seriously. That's right? I mean, it's just true. A little awareness, dude. If you're going to do it, at least hide it. Come on. I will say this about LSU. They are big on their players coming back, on showing what, you know, your time at LSU can do for you, how many players they put in the NFL, all of that. If you go into their amazing, phenomenal, spaceship-looking locker room and new facilities and all of that, they have a wall of lockers during the off season for some of those NFL guys that come back and maybe want to work out there. So they all have their own lockers kind of in like a certain little area of the locker room. They pride themselves on their players wanting to come back and work out there and all of that. So you got to really screw up if they're banning you from being back, is what I'm saying, because they create lockers for those guys.
That's the anti-Derek Dooley plan. Like, Derek Dooley didn't want any former players around. Like, I know former Vols that would call and say, hey, man, can I come to practice? Nope.
That's bizarre to me.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
There was a lot of weird going on with that guy, and I like him. But in terms of being a head coach, there was a lot weird going on.
Although,
like,
those were some of my favorite coaches' meetings.
He built, okay, so he renovated when he got the job, and he put his office nowhere near where he can see, like, the indoor fields. Like, the assistant coaches' offices are there. And then he built a throne of a desk.
Yep.
He put a stage up and then put the desk on top of it so he could look down at you when you sat there addressing Coach Dooley.
I remember, and say what you want to say about Butch Jones, but I remember when Butch took that job, and I think I worked maybe the second game of his tenure or something when he first took over at Tennessee, and I remember him telling me how he had to, like, switch everything around in that office and take down this platform that the desk was sitting on. And I remember him being like, I didn't really understand what was going on there, but that's what it was, that it was so that the former coach was elevated when speaking to people. How crazy is that?
It's crazy.
And it's really crazy too in spending time with him in talking, because I worked a bunch of Missouri games when he was the OC there. And it's crazy from that standpoint too, because he's extremely friendly. I mean, he doesn't come off as having a super ego or anything like that, you know? So, and clearly, I mean, he's from a football standpoint, his knowledge is there. It just didn't work as the head coach and leader of a program at that point. But, I don't know. There's some crazy stories back in the day.
There are. We've got some college football talk coming up with Chris Lowe. Jeremy Pruitt said today that this Bama offense is the best he's ever seen. I mean, last year, if you just want to go back to the beginning of last year, you had Tua, Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Waddell, all those guys.
I mean, wouldn't you say that if your team's about to walk in there and possibly start a brand new quarterback?
Well,
I'd say that too.
If you were me, you would start a brand new quarterback. If you missed the beginning of the show, I'm all in on Harrison Bailey starting against Alabama. I've been thinking about it a lot. Couldn't sleep last night, so I was thinking about Tennessee quarterback situation.
I don't know. Call me a softy or whatever you want to call me, but I'm like, no, we got to protect the kid.
No,
you got to mentally protect that kid.
Look, there's going to be some ugly. I'm just going to tell you that. There's going to be some bad. But there are going to be a few good things that we're going to pull from this, and you're going to experience how fast the best in the SEC is, which will help you down the road. Plus, you got a week off next week to pick all of the fallen mental pieces up.
Or to, like, have to waddle in these fallen mental pieces. I mean, you got to look at the other side here. You don't want to waddle in that.
I don't want to waddle.
Then you have a full week of having to waddle.
I want to waddle with Chris Lowe. That's coming up next. Stay tuned. 104.5 The Zone.
Coming up tomorrow afternoon with Blaine and Mickey.
We break down the Titans and the Steelers with former Pittsburgh's linebacker, Lavon Kirkland.
Plus, we look ahead to a big college football weekend.
Tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 3 on 104.5 The Zone.
HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery at 104.5 The Zone. Brent Doherty, Don Davenport, and Kirby. Kirby's here drinking Pepsis.
Kirby's a hot mess is what Kirby is, drinking his Pepsi. But hey, the good news is you buy Pepsi, they donate to St. Jude's.
Two $20 bottles for $3, and some of that goes to St. Jude's, thanks to Pepsi. And you can come by here, Sudden Service, Nashville Pike and Douglas Bend, the corner of 1845 Nashville Pike, to be exact. Actually, to be even more exact, 1845A Nashville Pike. Why is Kirby a hot mess right now? What did he do this time?
Oh, he was just telling me, hey, you are you going to talk about Two Rivers? You got to do that. I'm like, Kirby, it's in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, or like longer.
10 minutes.
Yeah.
Probably longer.
Let's do this. Let's welcome Chris Lowe into the mix and talk some college football.
We have missed you, C. Lowe. Welcome back.
Well, I missed you guys, and it's great to be back with you. And you know, it's great just to have some football, period, right?
Oh, no doubt.
It definitely is, and the Big Ten starts back up this week. Do you think that Ohio State is going to want to make a point against Nebraska or not?
I think Ohio State want to make a point all season, and I think the Big Ten as a whole has Ohio State to thank in large part for the Big Ten playing football. And now, Ohio State wasn't the only school that was sort of driving that engine to return to play, but it certainly was the school that was pushing the hardest. I'm not talking just about Ryan Day, the Buckeyes head coach. I'm talking about the administration. I'm talking about everybody there at that university. The Ohio State University was pushing hard to get the Big Ten back into play. And I think they're the one that really sort of was leading the charge. And hey, it's no secret. They feel like they've got a really good football team that can win it all. And when you look at their roster and some of the guys that had initially opted out that are coming back to play, like Sean Wade, you've got, if not the best quarterback in football, one of the best quarterbacks in football in Justin Fields. There's a lot of pieces in place there for Ohio State to win it all.
You know, we've been talking about this for a couple of days. There seems to be that elite tier, right? And I'll put three teams on it. And that's Alabama, Clemson, and I'll go ahead and put Ohio State on there. Then there's that next level where you can put a Georgia and whoever else. And then there's another tier. And there seems to be pretty good distance between that second tier and third tier. And it's just, you know, fan bases want to get to that level and want to be back is one phrase that a lot of fans want to use. But it's harder than that to do because those teams at the top are so freaking good.
Well, without question, Clemson and Bama have been better than everybody so far this year by a long stretch. And I would agree, Brent, I think Ohio State's in that tier. You know, I want to see them prove it on the field, at least the first two or three weeks. And sometimes it takes a while if you've been off as long as all the teams have, the Big Ten. But, you know, to your point, look at all the playoff spots. What was the first year of the playoff? 2014? So there's been, what, 20? I'm not a math major, but 24 playoff spots that we've had since it started. Look at how many of those spots have been occupied by the same teams. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma have occupied all but, gosh, I don't know, four, five, six spots during that time. It's essentially the same teams. It's the teams that recruit the best, the same teams that have elite coaches, elite head coaches that pay their staff a lot of money, they have great coaching staff, and the best players. So college football has sort of become exactly what you said, and I think this year you're going to see that separation maybe more than ever.
Chris Lowe with us, covers college football on a national level for ESPN.com. Chris, story coming out of Baton Rouge, I think the guys at Sports Illustrated had it initially, but LSU self-imposing penalties for football violations connected to booster payments, including the reduction of 8 scholarships, which is not insignificant. The school is also banning Odell Beckham Jr. from its facilities for 2 years for handing out cash, $2,000 distribution and $100 bills on the field, on television, after the national championship win over Clemson.
Come on, dude.
Ridiculous story there on that level, but looks like $180,000 alleged payment to a father of a player, too. A little bit of a mess down there.
Well, I've heard from good sources that when Dawn Davenport goes back to the Plains, there's always a few $100 still sticking out of her pocket. Is that true, Dawn?
That's true. You know, those volleyball players really rake it in.
Well, she needs to buy some better players, Chris.
if you look at the LSU situation, they have tried to get there. There's actually two cases going on. You've got the football situation and basketball. And LSU has tried to sort of have those, and I think is still asking to have those split into two, because, you know, you talk to a lot of people that are just absolutely shocked that Will Wade is still there as basketball coach, based on some of the allegations and some of the tapes that we've heard. Excuse me. So I don't know what's going to happen there, and there's a belief that as long as he's there, that the NCAA isn't going away. You know, that there's going to continue to be, you know, this scrutiny, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think that's the thing that surprises me about the LSU situation, is that LSU has stuck with, right or wrong, fair or unfair, they've stuck with Will Wade during this whole investigation.
Crazy. Speaking of basketball, what about that mess at Wichita State with Greg Marshall? I mean, there's no way he survives that, right?
Boy, if you read all the allegations on you know, on the surface and see what's being said, it's going to be hard. In this climate, you know, more than ever. I mean, when you've got some of those type allegations, yeah, it's going to be difficult. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I don't know and haven't really talked to anybody inside that situation and don't probably aren't as close to that as maybe others, but if you just read through some of the things being alleged, it's going to be difficult.
All right, let's get back to football here, and let's talk about Tennessee. So I was on the sidelines for the Tennessee-Missouri game and really got to see that offensive line dominate, and that has not been the case past that game for that offensive line. And they obviously struggled at quarterback. So there's a lot of talk, at least within the fan base, with my co-host over here, about who should start at quarterback for this Alabama game. I just want your take on it, Chris Lowe. And just to give you a background, my take is that you don't throw a true freshman in for his first ever start against Alabama. But then the other side of the take is, you know, hey, it's kind of a free year for everybody at this point. You know, is it time? And Mike Leach said this last week, talking about his guys, you know, hey, we got to get some of these young guys in, get them experience and get them better for the future. Like the future starts now kind of thing. So I want your take on Tennessee, the quarterback situation, the offensive line situation, and all of that.
You know, Don, whoever's playing quarterback for Tennessee's got to play better around the quarterback position, period. They got to be more consistent and certainly play to their capability and talent in the offensive line. They got to play cleaner football. And that's not just the offensive line, but the penalties. They got to be better at blitz pickups, making more plays in space. There's a lot of things around the quarterback that they've got to get, you know, tightened up. Now, that said, I agree with you. I don't think this is the week or this is the bunch to throw a true freshman to the Wolves against Alabama. You know, Harrison Bailey he didn't have a spring practice. I mean, how much does that kid rep, period, to get ready
for
football?
Not a lot. He missed 14 days.
Yeah, let alone Alabama. So this is not the time or place. Now, I know, Jeremy, they've been doing these extra practices for young players, scrimmages, to try to get some younger players ready. Because, again, to your point, later in the season, this season more than ever, you're going to have some young players and players that maybe you haven't counted up step up and play and contribute. But I just don't think this is the time to do that. Now, that said, Derek Garantano has turned the football over way too many times the last 2 weeks for someone who's played as much football as he has. Not every turnover has been his complete fault. But you can't turn the football over that position against some of the teams they played and have any chance of winning. I think what they're doing this week is they're just trying to see who is the best, most efficient, most consistent player at that position. I don't know where Jeremy Pruitt is now with the Maurer kid. I don't know, you know, if they feel like he's ready or there's enough trust to go with him. So I think it probably comes down to Garantano and Trout, who they'll start. One day I think maybe they'll stick with Garantano. The next day I think, well, try something new. Maybe you play multiple quarterbacks. Here's the thing that I think that the staff is wrestling with. If you're going to finish out this season and be a 500 or certainly a team that has a chance to be a winning football team, who gives you the best chance to do that right now? And if you lose Garantano for the rest of the year and Harrison Bailey is not ready to play, you not sure about the other two. Well, that's a tough – you talk about tough sledding the rest of the year against an all-league schedule. So there's a lot of things they got to sort through here. I know fans are frustrated to see Garantano turn it over and make a lot of the same mistakes that he's made to this point. But trust me, Jeremy Pruitt, Ben Chaney, Chris Winkie, they're there every day in practice. They're watching. And I know some kids just don't play well or play better in practice than they do in games. And that's probably been the case with Garantano. You know, Josh Dobbs was sort of the opposite of that.
Yeah.
He didn't always play great in practice, but boy, he was a gamer. He was a kid that just willed them so many key first downs and touchdowns and a lot of wins. You know, so he was the opposite of that. So it's a tough call, Dawn. I would say, just based on what I know and who I've talked to, you're going to see a couple quarterbacks play on Saturday against the Crimson Tide. I'd be very, very surprised, though, if you see him throw Harrison Bailey out there at the start.
Yeah, and you know, just listening to what you have to say and what Dawn has to say, the smart move probably is to start JG because he does have experience in terms of going against that kind of competition. But I would have a quick leash. That's for sure.
You got to try something new, Brent, because it hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And of course, there were times last year. But, you know, I think if you're Tennessee, you got to, you know, how do you get through this season? You know, and you got an off week after Bama, so you got some more time to maybe get some of these guys ready.
Yep.
If you don't feel like it's ready. And then you got a game at Arkansas. And listen, I'm not trying to look past them. I think the reality is Tennessee just doesn't have it, the horses to beat that crowd. But that game against Arkansas in 2 weeks may be the most important game that Jeremy Pruitt's coached at Tennessee.
Interesting. Four SEC games this week, as we mentioned, the Big Ten back at it as well. One of the games on the docket that I'm most interested in is not an SEC game, Chris. It's Michigan at Minnesota. Michigan, a 3-point favorite on the road, 6:30 night game. What do you think about that matchup?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the more attractive matchups this weekend because we find out right away about Michigan. And you talk about a big year. This is a key year for Jim Harbaugh. You know, and it's going to be a weird year period in the Big Ten. You're starting so late. You've had so little practice time. But to right out of the gate, they go up against an offense. Minnesota offense, big-time receiver in Bateman. You know they can move the football and throw it. You know, you find out about that defense. You know, Michigan's got some pass rushers. But I think they can give them some problems. They've tried to make some moves in the secondary. I don't think they're solidified back there, but you find out right away where you are on defense because Minnesota can score points, and they can certainly test you through the air. I think that for both teams, Minnesota's a team that is maybe lurking. You know, they're not the blue blood like an Ohio State, Michigan, or even Wisconsin in that league. But, boy, if they could win this game at home, first game against the Michigan, then all of a sudden they shoot up as a team that might be a dark horse in that league.
Chris Lowe covers college football nationally for ESPN.com. At CLOESPN is his Twitter handle. It feels like I'm not looking at the standings right now, but it feels like half the SEC is 2-2. The Big 12 I can't figure out either. What do you make of Texas and Oklahoma?
Yeah, well, to your first point, 10 of the 14 teams in the SEC, four games into the season, have two or more losses. And I can't take credit for this, guys, but I had three coaches in the league predict this before the season. He said, you want carnage? Fans want to see league games only. You're going to see carnage this year. You're going to see a lot of teams at the end of the season that have seven losses, six losses, or five losses. And then you're probably going to see a couple, i.e. Bama and Georgia, you know, with one or no losses. And I think that's what we're going to get. Big 12, I mean, I don't know what to make of that league. You know, Texas and Oklahoma, you talk about disappointed fan bases that have high hopes, and neither one of them have lived up to the hype. Oklahoma State's ranked the highest. I still want to see it from the Cowboys of the long haul. You know, are they good enough on defense? Of course, in that league, let's be honest, they play a different style of football. You know, you got to be ready to score 45 every week. Of course, it looks like to be Alabama, you're going to have to be ready to score 45 every week in the SEC. But certainly in the Big 12, you know, I think the staff at this point in the Big 12 that's done maybe the best coaching job is Chris Klieman at Kansas State. You know, they had that one loss to open the season that was bad, but they've come back pretty strong since then and had some good wins. But I, You know, I'm just not ready to say right now who's the best team in that league. Oklahoma State's got the firepower on offense, but I still wouldn't completely count the Sooners out of the Big 12 race.
Yeah, the Fun Belt had a lot of fun with that Big 12. Let me ask you about Florida. Obviously, they're dealing with some COVID issues down there, and you know, we'll probably see more news about that over the next few days. But I'm curious to get your take on their defense. Why is their defense that bad?
You know, they lost some key players, and they played some pretty good offenses. Some offenses have been pretty hot. I look around the league, honestly, Brent. I'm not trying to take, you know, let Florida off the hook, but you know, you look at a lot of the defenses in the SEC at this point, and lots of the SEC defenses are getting let up. I mean, what would you have said, Don, Brent? What would you guys have said back in August if somebody would have told you that Lane Kiffin would have let Nick Saban and that defense up for 48 points and 630 yards?
Yeah, no way.
I mean, it was almost like the Twilight Zone watching that game. And you're right. Florida's been bad on defense. LSU's been atrocious on defense. There have been a lot of defenses in the league. And again, in talking to D coordinators, you know, when you don't practice as much, you don't have guys together on the field as much to tackle and hit and go through the physical part of practice, you're just not able to scrimmage as much. Take all spring practice away, your defense is probably not going to be as good. And I think we've seen that across the league. But no, Florida is much more talented than they played on defense at this point. We'll see if that's off time. It's right now. They're going to have another off week this week. We'll see how much they can get things corrected because they're good enough offensively to be a factor in the SEC race. I mean, what Kyle Trask has done and the way they've scored points. I mean, it's, you know, the game has changed to where you're going to have to win some games now, 48-41, you know, 47-40. That's sort of the way the game is played now. But you also can't win every week like that. At some point, you got to play a little defense.
I'm not saying I kind of like it, honestly, but it's been fun. Hey, Chris, great talking with you, man. Glad you're doing well, and we look forward to having you on weekly on Mondays moving forward. Thank you, bro.
You bet. See you guys.
All right. At CeeLo ESPN. Chris is the best. A lot of topics in the world of college football at all times, so appreciate having him on. Sean Henry, one of our favorite people in the sports world in Nashville, joins us next. Talk about the Preds, a lot of things that they have going on. Stay tuned. 3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery.
Get the Titans and Steelers. Coverage starts Sunday at 10 a.m. with kickoff at noon on your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
Great job, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Britt Doherty, Don Davenport with you until 6 o'clock. Broadcasting live in Gallatin at Sudden Service, 1845 Nashville Pike. We would love to see you. We'll be here until 6 o'clock. You can get your Pepsi products, 2 for $3, 20-ounce bottles. Some of that money will go to St. Jude's, thanks to Pepsi. And appreciate them allowing us out of our homes.
Yes. It's good to be out. It's good to be free.
Good to be out. Sean Henry, president of the Nashville Predators, joins us now. Sean, what's up? How are you, man?
I don't even know who you guys are anymore. It's been so long since I've seen you.
It has been a long, long time. What have you been up to,
I don't like
man?
It. I don't like it at
have,
all.
Have you developed any new talents or skills since we last spoke?
You know, I've been asked that question a lot of times, and I hate it because the answer is no. I wish I could say, oh, yeah, I learned how to juggle. Like, you have Pecorino on. He learned how to juggle. He's an award-winning chef now. You have me on. I'm like, no. Sorry.
Well, yeah,
I mean, I wish I did, though. How about you guys?
No, probably not. But you know, we're fortunate that we can talk sports every day. So
exactly, that's about my skill. And I guess Dawn has learned how to, you know, live without any sleep anymore, right?
That's right. I tell you what, I've been really lucky. She's a good baby. She loves hockey and
I
football.
Hate people like you.
That's what everybody
said. I had 4 non-sleepers, and they still don't sleep. And the oldest one's 25.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, she's been sleeping through the night since she was 2 months old.
It's amazing, Sean. You'll be proud of this. Hadley cannot walk yet, but she can skate. It's amazing.
That's right.
Great to hear.
Hey, but seriously, along those lines, because I guess, you know, you have a new baby and daughter, and clearly I love sports, and it's a big passion of mine and my husband and my family, and I grew up playing sports. And obviously, you know, during playoff time, we watched hockey. But I never in my mind, until somebody brought it up, thought, oh yeah, I'm going to put her on skates and get her to go play hockey. But you guys are investing a ton of money into just that, girls hockey, learn to skate initiatives, all of that. I mean, let's talk about it, because my daughter is a perfect example of trying to change my mindset to put her into a sport that typically maybe isn't something that girls in play, especially in the South.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because we are proud of the investment we made, not just dollars, but time-wise. You know, when we launched the first, girls junior preds team, it was something that was important, but there's a second level that I think we were missing. And unfortunately, a lot of female sports are like this, as you know. They always trail behind, and it's not right, and it's not fair, but we always concentrate on travel first, which alone knocks a lot of kids out, just from a time standpoint, or if they're playing something else, where, you know, rec sports are still really good and vibrant for everybody, but we're a trail behind, you know, for girls. And my own daughter, she's 13 years old, she plays rec hockey. You know, she plays other travel sports, but she likes to play hockey, loves to play hockey. But she plays on a co-ed team, which is fine. But at the same time, sometimes you want to look around and play with people that look a little bit more like you, or at least same gender. And so it was really exciting to get the grant from the IGF, or Industry Growth Fund, that the players and the teams and the league fund together to invest $500,000 in girls playing hockey and making it more accessible, from learn to skate to learn to play, to funding equipment for them. We're breaking down every barrier there is. If you don't know how to play, you can now. If you don't have equipment and you don't want to invest in it, not knowing what the future holds, we'll provide the equipment for you. So I'm really excited about it, because our goal and job is to break down barriers, you know, for those that don't feel comfortable playing. And this focuses on girls. And eventually we won't have one travel team. We'll have 6 or 7 travel teams built on a really sound foundation, a pyramid of literally thousands of girls playing this great sport in our town. And it's okay to play rec hockey. And as you know, in a lot of sports, everyone's only focusing on travel or specialty. We need to get away from that and open up more sports to more kids just for fun.
Well, there were no sheets of ice here basically when you guys came here, and now there are. How's the Bellevue facility doing?
Yeah, it's great. It was a real shot in the arm to open up both facilities again. But we just celebrated the one-year anniversary of Bellevue, and the first 6 months were incredible, and the next 6 months were very bizarre, like every other business. But, you know, we closed it down for, I guess, about 6 weeks at the start of the pandemic, and we were very fortunate. We started bringing it back a little bit slowly in June to where we are right now. And while there aren't as many people in the stands watching their kids or spouses play or figure skating, it's nice to have it programmed in a pretty robust fashion. I've been out there for couple high school games and some rec hockey, and it's fun, you know, to be sitting with a few people watching your son or daughter, you know, play. It's been really cool. So it's been great. It'll be nice to get a little bit more normal for all of us. What we haven't done yet is open skate, you know, just that fun thing to do on a Friday night or Saturday night for, you know, teenagers. We haven't been able to do that yet, but hopefully that's coming soon.
Sean Henry, Chief Executive Officer, President, Alternate Governor of the National Predators, at President on Twitter, which is a great Twitter handle. Sean, how obviously the season didn't end the way that any of us wanted, but we go straight to the draft, and you guys make a big splash. You draft the Russian goaltender that a lot of people were talking about, Askarov at number 11 overall. How excited are you guys about him?
We're excited about the entire draft, but especially about him.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are, every team, every GM, every president says the same thing. I can't believe the guy fell to our draft position. I don't care what sport you're in. We always say that. And then sometimes you really mean it. And in this case, we truly cannot believe he was available at number 11. And then the post-draft reports on him have been so special. I mean, the people that, you know, the experts are comparing him to is, you know, the next coming of Carey Price or whomever you think, you know, the really big, flexible, mobile goalie is. And it's tremendous. He's 18 years old. And we get a chance to see him play in the KHL, which is, you know, it's a big league for a guy to develop in. So it's exciting. You know, hopefully that helps. The development process.
Let's talk a little bit about the kind of roster movement, because there's, you know, some portion of the fan base that says, oh, the Preds were dumping people and this, but then you made some moves to bring in really, I think, players that probably fit what you want in a team. So just kind of give us maybe the overall talk of the expansive moves when it comes to the existing roster.
Yeah, and you hit it. They were expansive, you know, but the key is the core wasn't touched. The idea was to build up, you know, from the bottom up. And when you look at our D core, you know, we improved our, you know, our third pairing, which is incredible. Those guys will probably be the first guys out on the PK or the penalty kill, which then enables your top four guys to do some different things and play different minutes of ice on 5-on-5 or power play, which really balances it very differently. I think you could argue that's the best defense we've ever had assembled, which has always kind of been our, you know, our bread and butter as an organization, our goalie tandem. We know what that is. It's one of the best ones in the league. And, you know, our top lines are still there. They're intact. No one in the league has more 30-goal scorers than the Nashville Predators. And I think it's important to remind people of that, because what I keep reading in the angry emails I get or tweets, you know, where's your 90-goal scorer? You know, where's Phil Esposito? Where's Wayne Gretzky? Well, the fact is, you know, we have 4 30-goal scorers on our team. What was important for us is to rebalance the cast around them to, again, allow them to do what they do, just like we did with the blue line. And, you know, we brought in some guys that are really, really hard to play against, and that's important. Now, again, I think maybe we got away from that a little bit. You know, the teams that we were more successful with, you didn't want to play us, and that's what I think we have this year as well. It opens up the opportunity for some young guys to come in. And then a trade that was really hard to make was, you know, letting Nick Bonino go to Minnesota. I mean, he was one of our better players year in and year out. Great guy on the ice, great guy off the ice, a leader. But we got 10 years younger with who we brought back in. And, you know, Luke is going to allow himself to, you know, play almost anywhere in the lineup, but probably in that second line, depending on what else happens. And he plays a lot like Nick. But, again, it's a little bit younger, which is nice. And then you counterbalance that with a good, solid veteran who unfortunately scored that game-winning goal against us in Phoenix this summer. So I guess if you can't beat him, you join him, and we had him join us. So we're really excited about what we have. And, again, it gives a chance, you know, for some young guys to play. And then we also have some salary cap room that will allow us to take advantage of a move if we choose to, because a lot of teams' rosters are not done being made yet. You know, with the cap remaining flat year over year, you're still going to see a lot of moves being made around our league, because teams have to get under the cap where they're struggling right now. So I'm excited about where we are. If we made no more moves, this is an exciting team to watch. And again, we all want, you know, Forsberg to click and, you know, get to that 40 or 50 goal mark, or Arvey, or, you know, what can, you know, Duchesne get back to some of the scoring. That's what we want to see. And ideally this is the year, and maybe that next young player is developed as well. Because our guys have been capped. They haven't been able to play those meaningful minutes, and now they will.
Sean Henry, President, CEO, Nashville Predators with us. On the way out, real quick, I did want to throw this out there, because I've talked to some season ticket holders that are thrilled with how flexible and understanding you guys have been with regard to tickets and during these really tough times. And I know you have a November power play going on as well.
Yeah, so for us, it was easy decision to make that let's just waive November's payment. You know, most of our season ticket holders are on a 12-month payment plan, and you know, we stopped the payment at the end of last year, obviously, when we paused the season. But then most of our fans, you know, we gave them the choice. You can stop your payments now, jump on the payment plan, and most wanted to stay on the payment plan for whatever reason. But we decided we have the best fans in sports. It's nice to remind them of that and say thank you. And that's what this is. You know, we waived November's payment, and it's been responded to even bigger than I thought it would. But it really is just nothing more than us saying thank you to our fans. You look what they've done for us in this community. You know, they pushed us through the tornado and helped us raise money and bring attention to all those in need. And they were the power behind the credit that we got. And then all those that are affected, you know, through the pandemic, you know, they're there for us, and they're helping make a few dark days for too many people a little bit better. So, again, it's just a small way of saying thank you. Best fans in sports deserve recognition every once in a while.
Sean Henry, you're the best, man. It's good to hear your voice, brother, and appreciate the time.
Well, it's great talking to you guys. I cannot wait to see you in person, though. It's been far too long. for all of us for so many things. So I look forward to getting back together soon.
At President on Twitter, agreed. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yes.
All right. When we come back, Titans headlines for you. And Todd Furman coming up at 5:15. We'll take a look at all of the point spreads and guys that are wagering on sports are having a tough time this year because these lines are crazy. These teams are crazy. Todd Furman coming up at 5:15. We'll be right back in Gallatin, Sutton Service, 104.5 The Zone.
Jason Martin and Ramon Foster. They don't just want you to listen. They want you to also hang out and kick it with them every morning. As long as you're wearing pants, that is. J. Martin Ramon, tomorrow morning from 6 to 9 on 104.5 The Zone.